So there are a couple of cases before the high court, Tony. Can you tell us what's at issue?
Yeah, this is these are cases in a long line of cases where the court is trying to deal with new technology. Technology that was not around when the founders passed the Fourth Amendment.
Sure. And let me interject. They're also trying to decide a case that involves broadcast television rights. That's new technology that they're grappling with.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got cases in the last few years dealing with infrared, sense-enhancing technology. We're wondering about GPS tracking devices. Can you have drones that are going to be surveilling your homes? And so the smartphone, cell phone cases that came up yesterday in oral argument are really just part of the court's struggle to try to figure out how do we apply the Fourth Amendment in a digital age, and how do we deal with all the rules that the court had come up with over the years in a pre-digital age, and now they're trying to transfer that same set of rules to modern issues.
So there are two cases at stake, but the rise of the cell phone is so different from other documents or entities that we think of as private. Diaries, notebooks, even your briefcase. Police can search any of that during an arrest without a warrant. That is established law, correct? However, cell phones have such personal information, text, images, your GPS location. It's a very personal thing.
It was very interesting in the arguments yesterday because that's exactly what the Supreme Court justices are struggling with. On the one hand, they're looking at cell phones as just the new way people will keep photographs or other items they normally would have put in their wallet. And they're saying, well, why can't we just apply all the old rules? You know, if we could arrest you and get your wallet and look at your pictures, why can't we look at your cell phone
pictures? Why is this different?
Yeah. But on the other hand, they talked about just the vast amounts of data that is contained in the cell phones. And, you know, it's not like you have three pictures of your family. You've got 10,000 photos of your entire life in there. And in some of the cases, that's exactly the type of photos that got one of these guys in trouble.
Let's talk about that. What's at issue here? Tell us a little bit about the specifics of this particular case.
Sure. There were two cases, one out of California and one out of Boston, Massachusetts. In California, basically, we have a gang case. There was a shooting, an attempted murder of somebody shooting into a vehicle. And David Riley winds up being charged with these offenses. And he is it's ironic, he's actually stopped for having expired license plates. And the police wind up searching his car, and they find some handguns in his car, and they wind up arresting him. And when they arrest him, he has a smartphone on him, an Apple iPhone. And it's when they go into that iPhone and they look at some of his videos that are in there, some of his pictures, they realize that this guy is a member of a gang that was involved in the shooting. They're able to look at the logs in the phone and determine that he actually made the phone a phone call close to where the shooting occurred. And so they pretty much are able to use it as part of the case against him to tie him not only to the shooting, but to being a gang member.
Interesting. And if you're just joining the program, lots of calls already. Give us a call right now here on First Coast Connect at 549-2937. We're discussing a couple of cases before the Supreme Court. Do you agree or disagree that police officers should be allowed to conduct a warrantless search of your cell phone? This would include even a minor traffic stop or maybe getting stopped for jaywalking, anything from minor to major arrests. We want your calls. We'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Tony Kolenk with Florida Coastal School of Law. Lots of tweets already coming in. Here's one from a listener. Warrants are required for searching or seizing home computers. Smartphones are nothing but a small portable home computer. What about that argument?
Right. Well, so the whole issue comes down to when they seize the smartphone, because you're right. The caller is absolutely right. You normally would need a warrant to search that type of material. And so it came down to the fact that they got the smartphone from him when he was being arrested. And there's actually a very old tradition of allowing police to search containers on people who they arrest, not only for the safety of the officer, but also to make sure that somebody won't destroy evidence when they're arresting them. And so that's what we call the search incident to a lawful arrest exception to the warrant requirement.
Now, repeatedly over the years, the High Court has repeatedly affirmed the government's discretion to conduct warrantless searches of people and vehicles in the interest of public safety and to prevent the destruction of important evidence that could help their case. What about the public safety argument?
Yeah, so that definitely came up in the oral arguments yesterday, because there were various potential problems if you require the police to get a warrant before they can look in somebody's cell phone. And some of the hypotheticals that were thrown out there were, what if the cell phone was going to be used to set off a bomb, and now we have this, you know, requirement to look in there and see if it's going to detonate a bomb? Or what if the cell phone is being, you know, used to have other gang members come to the police officer's location, and, you know, the police officer could be in danger if he didn't know that that was going on? And so those issues, though, the court really didn't address those issues. In fact, some of the justices on both sides, you know, liberals and conservatives, seemed to punt on that question and say, well, that would be an emergency circumstance, and that's not really at issue in this case. And they almost seemed all to be in agreement that that would be okay if the officer really thought there was an emergency. But that wasn't the case in these cases before them.
And then, Tony, also the larger national debate that's been playing out for months, how much reach and power does the government have to search our data? As the president announced changes in the way the National Security Agency, the NSA, will gather what's known as metadata, the phone calls, the numbers and times of phone calls by nearly all Americans.
Yeah, I mean, the issues, as important as they are in these two cases before the court, are probably not the most disturbing issues. I mean, people do everything, of course, on their email, on their computers. And there's other cases where the justices are realizing the rules they had put in place, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago do not protect current Americans from, for instance, having the telephone company or the cell phone company, the internet service provider, just give over all of your websites that you've been on in the last however long, you know, all of the phone calls you've made, all the things you've done. And the Fourth Amendment, you know, doesn't stop the police from, you know, seeking that information from these companies and them just being able to turn it over without a warrant.
And if you're just joining us, lots of calls coming into First Coast Connect this morning as we discuss a couple of cases before the U.S. Supreme Court that go to the very heart of the Fourth Amendment. What do you think constitutes an unreasonable search and seizure as the court debates whether to allow law enforcement to conduct a warrantless search of your cell phone should you be stopped? We want to know what you think. 549-2937 is the number to join the show. Let's begin with Mike in Jacksonville. Mike in Jacksonville is on the air. Hey, Mike. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate this. It's
sure.
Always such a great show, and this is a great topic. The question asked was, do I agree? Absolutely not. I think that there's no way that they should allow this. It sounds good. I can see where it would sound good to somebody. Oh, let's stop the ticking bomb. Let's catch the gang leaders. Let's do this. Let's do that. But when you start looking at some of the other things that have come out in the news lately where police have either through just incompetence or flexing a muscle, abuse, have shot innocent citizens or have unreasonably detained or committed searches on obviously innocent citizens and whatnot. I just think that we already have the guidelines are already way too loose for police as it is, and this is just adding to that. There is I'm sure that there are wonderful police officers. I mean, I know there are, and I'm not trying to indict police as a group, but when you look at the exceptions to the rule, the people that are just plain incompetent or abusive or just lack good judgment on the police force that form the most extreme cases of these sorts of things, that's as a group, they just don't need to be saddled with that kind of judgment. And the risks to the public, I think, are far too great to allow this.
That's Mike.
That's my thought, so.
Thank you. That's Mike in Jacksonville. Mike, thanks for the call. So Mike comes down on the issue of privacy.
Right, yeah.
On the side of privacy.
Right. And Mike is actually tapping into a long tradition of distrust of law enforcement, even though we know that, you know, by and large, law enforcement are going to do their job, that they're going to respect our rights. There always are those cases of abuse. And of course, the Fourth Amendment is there to try to limit the amount of discretion that law enforcement might have. That's why the warrant requirement, for instance, requires a neutral and detached magistrate to make the determination whether to search something or not. But I think it's important to realize where this particular rule came out of. Imagine the scenario where the police officer is arresting somebody. If they were not allowed to search the person they were arresting, that person could have a weapon on them. Could be a gun, could be a knife, could be a razor blade, which could then be used to attack the police. They could have evidence in their pocket. You know, we have cases where they have like a cigarette box, and in the cigarette box there's, you know, illegal drugs, crack cocaine or something. And, you know, if they took that carton of cigarettes, they could destroy the evidence on the way to the station. So these are the reasons that the Supreme Court has tolerated police searching people without a warrant when they're arresting them. And that's really what this case is about, is, you know, can they look in your cell phone for similar reasons?
And of course, police might argue that if they could find that one key piece of data, it's life. It could be life-saving. It could stop a major event that could cause injury or death. That's the argument, the public safety argument, of course.
And not only that, the discussion yesterday with the Supreme Court, they really focused on how easy it is to destroy evidence on a cell phone. There could be a signal that is generated away from the scene that would cause the cell phone to erase all evidence on it, perhaps of a particular crime, could be wiped. And there was a discussion about some sophisticated techniques that the police are using to try to prevent that from happening. They were talking about something called Faraday bags, where you can put a cell phone in this bag and it wouldn't be able to receive a signal from the outside. So it gets pretty high tech.
And we're getting so many tweets about this, looking at potential unforeseen consequences of however the court rules. Ryan tweets the show, imagine this issue as wearable tech becomes as normal as a smartphone. You know, he's talking about Google Glass and things
right.
like that. There are lots of implications here. Lots of calls, meanwhile, at 549-2937. Let's go to Pat in Fleming Island. He's on the air. Hi, Pat. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. I was fascinated yesterday that it was either Alito or Scalia that asked, what's the difference between the cell phone and a wallet? He said you could have five pictures in your wallet that the police could look at. And if you turn that question around, the difference between a cell phone and a wallet, try to take a picture with your wallet. try to look up weather radar with your wallet. There's so many things that the cell phone can do. The wallet is merely just a holder of some small items. They don't even equate. It's like, what's the difference between a wallet and a washing machine? I found that question staggering by those guys. You know, and to think that the police, all they're trying to do is this warrantless. What is wrong with them just getting a warrant? That's what I don't understand.
Oh, okay, thank you. That's Pat in Fleming Island. What about that, Tony?
Yeah, that was a big issue yesterday because, you know, justices like Justice Ginsburg and Kagan were asking those exact questions. They would say, hey, you've got the cell phone in your custody. You know, you put it in a bag that nobody can wipe it. Why not then take the hour or two it's going to take to get the warrant? And, you know, that's always been the case in these arrest search cases because, you know, they could have always gone and got those warrants. But the court in the past has said, you know, we're not going to try to put the police in the position where they have to make this judgment in every call. You know, do I need to get a warrant here? Is it important enough to look? And so they wanted a bright line rule. But now when you apply that bright line rule to the cell phone and smartphone context, it creates some disturbing implications.
Lots of feedback. Meanwhile, on our First Coast Connect Facebook page, Leslie writes, I disagree with this. Get the warrant first. Melody on Facebook, if you caused an accident because of texting and driving, I'm all for it. Any other case? Absolutely not. Strong opinions. And let's go now to more callers waiting on hold. Steve in Jacksonville. Steve, thanks for holding. You're on the air. All right, Steve, why don't you give us a call back? Steve, are you with us?
I am. Thank you for taking my call, Melissa.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment that I think that if the crime that you commit is something where you can be arrested for, then they should be able to take your cell phone. But if I'm stopped for just speeding or something, I don't understand why they would want my cell phone. So that's kind of my comment as far as it needs to relate to the crime that you've committed that you're stopped for. If not, I don't think they should be able to take your phone. Thank you. And that, I'll take my
thank you.
The answer off
That's
here.
Steve in Jacksonville. Would the ruling be that sweeping, Tony, or might they issue a narrow ruling?
Right. Steve is right on the spot here. And I think he probably has touched on maybe the most likely compromise the court might come up with. Which is, you know, they were struggling with ways to limit the rule that's out there. And one of the ideas was sort of like Steve said here, what if we just limit it so the police can only look for evidence of the crime that they're arresting you on? And then somebody else had suggested maybe even just limit it to serious crimes. And so you might see the court trying to – I doubt they're going to give a broad sweeping rule that just allows the police to search anytime, you know, for anything. I think they might try to put some limits on it, such as Steve is suggesting.
And another comment on Facebook from Carrie. I agree with this. The police need information related to their case. Let's go back to the phones, 549-2937, to connect with us. Dave in Nassau County. Hello, Dave. How are things up your way?
Things are very well. How are things down there?
Doing great, thanks. Go ahead.
I think it's important for the listening audience to hear the actual text of the Fourth Amendment. It says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized.
Thank you for that, Dave. That is the complete text. And Dave, as you point out, it's important to know specifically what the founders laid out. And of course, Tony, ever since that amendment was written, people have been arguing about it. Dave, yeah. Thanks for the call this morning.
Yeah, and actually, I'm glad you read that. I was going to read it at some point. And the word to focus on, I think, is unreasonable searches and seizures. And that's what the court is struggling with here. When you're arresting somebody, is it reasonable for the police to look in some containers they have for these reasons? And that's the issue.
And as you said, when the founders framed this document, there were no cell phones.
Exactly.
And it's been fascinating to watch the high court grapple with this new technology, not just in this case, but also the other day we featured the case that would involve how broadcast content is streamed on the internet. Technology is racing far ahead of our existing statutes.
Yeah, and it's interesting because some of the Justice Sotomayor, for instance, just a few years ago in the GPS tracking case, she said, you know, it's necessary to reconsider pretty much all of the case law that they've had in the past because she said, I doubt people would accept without complaint this idea that you can disclose to the government without a warrant every website you visited in the last year, that people just don't expect that that's what's going on. But that's what the rules allow at this point.
More comment on Facebook. What about cases of cyberbullying, texting, and driving? This is extreme, but say you have a suspected kidnapper. Should we have to wait to get a warrant to search his phone? Heck no. And let's go to Kimberly in Jacksonville. She's on the line. Hi, Kimberly. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, thank you. Go ahead.
My question is, if they have to get a warrant to look at a laptop or a computer, how does that differ from the phone since it is a computer?
And I think that's a great question, Kimberly. Someone else pointed that out on Twitter earlier in the hour. Kimberly in Jacksonville, thanks for the call. Will the court rule, Tony, based on it's hard to read the tea leaves, but do you think they'll rule that a phone is essentially a small computer and not subject to a warrantless search, or would they go the other way?
Well, and they actually recognize that the phone is, and some of the justices said exactly what Kimberly just said. You know, this is a microcomputer here. And the same rule, see, would apply to not only phones in your possession, but what if you were carrying your laptop with you? What if you were carrying a tablet with you? The same rule would apply. I think they're going to try to find a middle ground here where they're going to probably allow some, ability for the police to search in this circumstance, but recognize that it might not be limitless.
Well, we'll watch with interest. In the meantime, we so appreciate your insight.
Thank you. I appreciate being on the show.